the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanti Nilayam. I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have yet another exciting talk, and this time by Brother Satyajit. Brother Satyajit, of course, needs no introduction to the Satya Sai fraternity. He had the greatest fortune anyone can ask for, that is to live physically with Bhagwan, and that too for more than a decade. Swami says that living with God is true education. So the lessons and insights shared by Brother Satyajit are truly exceptional, and that makes this a must-hear talk. The topic of his talk is Sai Mata Hiranyagarbha. This talk was delivered in the Satsang Hall in Prashanti Nilayam during the Dasara of 2013. The talk is followed by a question and answer session. So stay tuned till the end, dear listeners, and over to Brother Satyajit.
Om Shri Sai Ram. We offer our loving and prayerful pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. We pray to Bhagwan to continue to keep blessing us with love, devotion, and an intense desire to continue on our path of sadhana and good life. The topic that I have chosen is called Sai Mata Hiranyagarbha, the Divine Golden Source. I would like to start by creating a vision for you, painting a picture for you of the first time that I had seen Swami materializing something. I was a 17-year-old boy. I had just joined the Vrindavan hostel for the summer course. We had just joined Vrindavan. I had got admission in the Prashanti Nilayam campus, but the first summer course was in Vrindavan. So there we were, sitting in the auditorium one fine evening, having spent the entire day listening to various lectures from various dignitaries as part of the summer course. That evening we were sitting in the college auditorium waiting for Swami's discourse. In his usual manner, Swami came. We were sitting somewhere in the back row, back rows. Swami started his discourse. We were 17-year-olds, restless, not understanding Telugu, obviously, in those days. And we used to keep wondering how much of bouncers Swami is sending our way. I mean, telling that he is talking about the highest Atman, Brahman. So we should array bought difficult hayar. I mean, we are not able to understand. And Bhagwan has his own way of getting to us. Bhagwan has his own way of grabbing our attention. So there he was, standing majestically on the dais, at the dais. And suddenly his hand started rotating in huge circles. Normally, you know, he does it small. He was going round and round and round. For a long time he was rotating. And then came a golden lingam in his hand. I don't know how many of you have seen the picture of Swami holding aloft that it's an orange background. And here is Bhagwan holding that lingam, that Hiranyagarbha. The whole auditorium was, the atmosphere was electrifying there. The whole auditorium was thrilled. Swami had our attention. Even the new monkeys who had come in, right? We were all new monkeys. All that chatter going on in the head. All the new monkeys, their attention is fixed on Swami. And then Bhagwan started speaking about the Hiranyagarbha. You can imagine the effect of that incident on a young mind. We did not comprehend. We were just thrilled by the fact that we have seen Swami materializing something. And Swami gave so many quotes about that. That is not in my head right now. I don't remember those things. But I remember the intensity of that incident. You know, what lives with us, what lives beyond us, is not the knowledge that we acquire. It is the sense of being one with, being in love with Swami that lives on with us forever. Those words I may not remember today, but that intensity and that desire to read more, to understand more about what was that Swami had created that day. That persists even today. But that was my first impact. So Bhagavan spoke about the Hiranyagarbha at length, about how that is the source of all creation. And we were wondering, scratching our head, how can the source of the entire creation be in Swami's hand? Right? Analytical minds trying to wonder, how do I comprehend with this? How do I try to make sense? How do I put this big idea into that small, book racks that I've got in my head? This is too big an idea for me to comprehend. And what we need is, there is a beautiful saying that Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa says, that when an elephant walks into a puddle, when an elephant walks into a small puddle, it makes the whole water muddy. But a whale, which is tens of times bigger than the elephant, swims within the ocean without creating a single flutter. The consciousness, our consciousness needs to increase, needs to expand, to be able to comprehend what the divine manifests, what the divine gives us. We have to expand our consciousness. We cannot understand what God is trying to give with our small minds. In the Ishopanishad that I was trying to, because of this intense desire of trying to know, because I've chosen this topic of Hiranyagarbha, I was doing a lot of reading. And in the Ishopanishad, where they speak about the Hiranyagarbha, they have one beautiful line which says that those sages who have done the sadhana, the tapas, with a blessed heart, who have thought through the heart, they say. They don't say who have thought through the intellect, who have thought through the heart. I was struck by that beauty of that statement, which says, do not think with your analytical, rational mind. Think from a level of consciousness. Think from a level that is much deeper, that will be able to comprehend the otherwise incomprehensible thing. So here was Bhagwan holding that Hiranyagarbha. And what we could understand as kids at that instance was that here was something magnificent that has happened right in front of our eyes. We were part of something grand. That was the comprehension that we had. That was enough for us at that point of time. And then we came across many incidents where, this picture became the most popular picture ever. Each one of us started buying multiple copies. I remember writing a 5-page letter home from the summer course with the picture. Sending home, Swami, keep this picture at home, mummy, keep this picture at home, pray to this picture, daddy, and big letter I'm writing, 17-year-old enthusiasm. And that picture, there are so much of stories, so many stories around that picture of having given life, at some of the most crucial moments to many people. So that was the incident of the Hiranyagarbha from which I would start my interaction with all of you. What is the Hiranyagarbha? There are multiple sources which talk about the Hiranyagarbha. One of the references comes in the Rig Veda, in the 10th chapter, in the 121st canto. He says that, in the beginning rose the Hiranyagarbha, born only the Lord of all created beings. The Hiranyagarbha came before the Lord was created. That's what they say. He fixed and held up the earth and the heaven. To what God shall we adore our oblation? They create a vision for you, telling that here was the Hiranyagarbha that arose. They use it, in different contexts. Sometimes they bring the Hiranyagarbha as an object. Sometimes they portray Hiranyagarbha as a Purusha, as a God who has emanated out of nothingness. And there is a picture that these sages, these seers, they paint a picture telling that here is God who has emerged out of nothingness, and he is looking around trying to find out, whom should I pray to? Whom should I give my oblations? Because I am the supreme. Now whom should I pray to? A beautiful imagery, right? You can see God coming out of nothingness and then wondering, okay, now whom do I pray to? In the Manusmriti, it comes down to a more concrete understanding. People, we need to bring things to our comprehension. We are bringing it, making that incomprehensible. We are trying to make sense out of it. And in the Manusmriti, they say that he, desiring and seeking to produce various creatures from his own body, first created the waters and deposited in them a seed. This seed, this Hiranyagarbha, became the golden egg, resplendent as the sun, in which he himself was born as Brahma. He says that he created the waters, the unmanifest, the avyakta, the one who is not expressed himself, who has not manifested. He has created the waters, then he has put the seed, and from that seed turns into a resplendent sun, which is the Hiranyagarbha. Now in scientific concepts, when we read about astrophysics, etc., there is this concept of the beginning, before the Big Bang, what happened in the initial stages of the Big Bang, how the entire universe was there in the microcosm. I mean, it's a beautiful concept where scientists are trying to make sense of the beginning of creation, and here are that same thought process was going on in a very deep understanding, trying to understand how the creation came. And this is what the seers and the sages are coming up with, telling that he, who was manifest, created the waters and then put the seed, which became the Hiranyagarbha. And from that, within that Hiranyagarbha, Brahma himself took birth. Right? So this is the Hiranyagarbha that Swami is talking about. We have seen so far the mother aspect. I mean, the Garbha is the mother aspect, the womb, the source of all creation. Now when we try to make sense, here it was that from the big divine manifestation, who is looking around, where is God, whom do I worship, to the understanding of the creation, to the understanding of creation. Hiranyagarbha first was defined as, where is God? He is standing. Hiranyagarbha is standing. Next level of understanding comes, telling that Hiranyagarbha was the source of all creation. You know, it can be correlated to the Big Bang and to the creation of the whole universe. But is the mother, our mother, when we look at our own mother, is she the source of only my physical being? Is she the source of just my body? Or is she the source of everything that I today stand for? The good thoughts, the love that I have in my heart, is it not the gift of my mother? So we come to the next level of understanding. We try to, from those two levels, we come to the next level of understanding, where the mother, the womb, is nothing but the source of all goodness in me too. All that is golden inside me. The Hiranyagarbha. Hiranya stands for golden, right? Hiranya, resplendent. Resplendent golden. So when Swami calls us Bangaru, that was his most favorite appellation to all of us. Bangaru, Ruddu Bangaru, Chal Santosham Bangaru, right? When he used to call us Bangaru, he used to set an ideal for us. What was the counterpoint for Bangaru? He used to always call it Chiller Buddhi. Here I am calling you gold, and you are like petty coins. You are behaving as if you are 5 paise, 10 paise coins, and here I am calling you Bangaru. I am calling you, comparing you to gold. So Hiranya, the understanding for me, the significance of that word Hiranyagarbha, is the source of all goodness, not just the source of creation. Yes, those are for the seeing the big picture. Yes, that is important. We'll come to that later. For Swami to be a personal God to me, that Hiranya means golden qualities. And that was always the effort Bhagwan used to put. That was the struggle that Bhagwan always went through. I'm using the word struggle for Bhagwan, right? Because it is not easy to transform monkeys, right? It is not easy. It is not easy to tame the monkey mind. I was once very fortunate to be in the interview room. There was one lady minister who had come. She had become a minister in the BJP government at a very early age. She was a young lady. And Swami had called her for interview, and she had come alone. Swami never calls anybody for an interview alone. So Swami had called her inside, so she went inside. So before Swami entered the room, then he stopped, he turned back, looked at me and called me. So I went inside, I got the chance of, and Swami told me, stand by the door. So I was standing next, close to the door, and Swami was talking to this lady. And Swami is telling that lady, do you know who this boy is? So, she looked back, she looked at me and told, Swami, your boy. Yes, yes, my boy. And then he says, do you know why he's inside? I don't know, Swami. Because I never speak to a lady alone. Right? So that is the physical thing of, you know, Swami teaching us, Swami teaching me as a youngster. For me it is, and for us youngsters it is an answer telling that, you know, how do we conduct in front of society? How do you conduct your life in society? And this lady, she spoke to Swami something beautiful. She said, Swami, I love you, Swami, but I don't love you for what you are. I love you for what I am when I am with you. A beautiful thought, the way she expressed with so much of fervor, telling that the qualities that I find in me when I am near you, the qualities that I find sprouting from the springs of my heart when I am in your contemplation, when I am in love with you, it is for that that I love you, I adore you. Because you are the source, you are the Hiranyagarbha, you are the source of all that beautiful quality, all those beautiful qualities that spring out spontaneously in my heart. You are, that is the real Hiranyagarbha for me. Swami always says, nothing is out there, nothing is extra, nothing that is visible is actually existing. What is real is yourself, right? That divinity, that beauty, that love, that golden resplendence that is there inside us, that is what is true. So I would like to spend the next few minutes talking about what the Hiranyagarbha inside has, the divinity inside that is there, what has that divinity thrown out, what has it given birth to in my heart. The first, very first thing I would like to share, because this was an incident that happened during the Dasara time in 1996. I have shared this earlier, but I would like to share it with a great emphasis to this August gathering. It was October 1996. My parents had come for Dasara. Dasara got over and they all left. They took my brother with them. I continued to stay on for the vacation. I was alone in the room. It was a big room with 14 or 15, which accommodates around 14 boys. And all of them had gone for vacation. I was all alone in the room. And I used to come to, I was very happy, you know, telling that there is hardly any boys in the mandir. And, you know, I get to go there and I get to speak to Swami every day. So one day, out of the blue, he asked me, if I give you a tiger claw, will you keep it? This morning when I was preparing, I was thinking of various ways of what to convey. And, you know, I saw that the chain that Swami had given, it had got all entangled. Right? There are two chains that Swami had given. It had got entangled, so I was spending a lot of time trying to remove it and, you know, this inside, outside. And as I was doing it, suddenly the thought came that probably Swami is telling, tell this incident. Right? So speak about this incident. So I managed to unentangle the whole thing, and so here I am listening to Bhagavan, the inspiration, and sharing this incident. So Swami asked me, if I give you a tiger claw, will you keep it? I mean, it's like a sudden googly, right? It's a, you don't know where this question is coming from. How do we bat? This is like Shane Warne's googly. I told Swami, why Swami? Iste tiskuntava. Swami tiskuntan Swami. Whatever Swami gives, I will take Swami. But why Swami again, right? Why? Rakshana kosam. For your protection. I told, no way. Swami, you are my protection. I told Swami, you are my protection, Swami. Pa, chal chal santosham. I told, right? Next day, same time, same place. Again, inside the interview room, Swami asked, if I give you a tiger claw, will you keep it? Now I was a bit worried. No, yesterday also he had asked. Today again he's asking. I told Swami, whatever you give, Swami, I will take. But you are my protector. Abba, pativrata, chal chal niku. No? This is one of his ways of always pulling the legs, telling enough of your devotion. No? So and again he dropped the topic. Third day, again he asked the same question. I was really worried now, telling that probably some major catastrophe is coming, and then here is Bhagavan trying to protect me, and then I am telling that I don't want, or trying to show extra devotion, etc. See, you know, young boys, all the ideas go on. So I told Swami, whatever you give, I'll take, Swami, but you are my protector. I stuck to my line. Again, Swami dropped the topic. That night, I had a dream. A very, very intense, dream. I was sweating more than I am sweating now. So I was alone in the room around 3:30, 4 o'clock in the in the morning, early mornings, I had this dream that I am traveling on a very, very open vehicle. It's a very, the smoothest vehicle ever, like no bumps, no jumps, absolutely traveling like on a glass surface, probably a hovercraft, I don't know. It was going that smoothly. It's an open vehicle and I'm, exposed to the air. I can feel the breeze. And I'm enjoying myself going at that very wonderful speed. And then another similar vehicle comes next to me. And there is that person. I can see that person. I can sense that person is Swami. But he's not looking like Swami. He looks like Shirdi Baba. Right? But I know that I can sense that he is Swami. And that person, out all of a sudden, he comes and pounces and tries to push me away. So I'm wondering, why is he trying to push me away? If he is Swami, why is he trying to harm me? Why is he trying to harm me? So I'm perplexed. All of a sudden, there's a brake. No, the vehicle applies the brake, and there is a vehicle in front of me, a huge truck, which has got those iron pipes, which they take for construction, the big rods, not pipes, those rusted rods. There are lots of those rods, and I go and crash into that. It's an open vehicle, and six rods, they enter through me, and it comes out from behind. I know it was excruciating. The pain was real. I call it a dream, but the pain was so excruciating that when I got up, my entire pillow, my bed sheet, everything had become drenched in sweat. I was drenched in sweat when I got up that morning. And here is Bhagwan. Here is that person who is the Swami in some other form. He jumps out of that and he's trying to pull out those rods. And I am shouting, no, Swami. And I'm trying to push Swami away even when he's trying to pull out those rods. Because the pain is excruciating. When I got up, and at that moment I got up because the pain was so unbearable, I got up. The only word, like a japam, it was going on in my mind, continuously repeating. I went, washed my face, but that word was following me like a swarm of bees, right? You can't run away from a swarm of bees. And that word was only Arishad Vargas, Arishad Vargas, Arishad Vargas, Arishad Vargas, Arishad Vargas. Continuously that word. Arishad Vargas are the six vices that bring down man. Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya. Kama, desire. Krodha, anger. Kama, Krodha, Lobha is greed. Moha is attachment. Mada is ego, pride. And Matsarya is jealousy. These are the six qualities that bring a man down. All spirituality that you have, every sadhana that you do, comes to naught, comes to nothingness, if these qualities, these weeds, Swami calls it, these weeds find root in your heart, then all the good qualities will be wiped out. So this is the word that keeps on going on in my mind. So I am terrified. I go back, I go to Mandir that morning. Some guests had come on that day and I could not speak to Swami. So I was in a dual mind. Should I tell about this to Swami or should I not tell? It's so intense. I was so scared. I was really scared that morning. But I did not get a chance to tell Swami. So the whole day, from morning till afternoon, I was continuously thinking, what should I do? What is the meaning of this dream? What should I convey to Swami or not in the evening? So I go in the evening. As soon as I enter, and I'm determined telling that I will tell Swami. And then at the same time, probably I should not tell Swami. Because Swami will tell that, oh, you've got bad qualities in you, right? You're always worried. You don't want to expose yourself even in front of Swami. Our ego is so much that we don't want to expose ourselves even in front of Swami. So this thought process, as soon as I entered, Swami asked me, hey, pocket mein kya hai? So, Swami, photo hai Swami. Right? Boys, we will always show the best things. First, Swami's photo is there. Swami, hey, aur kya hai? Swami's handkerchief is there. Aur kya hai? Swami, pen hai, Swami. And I told the pen, hey, sariga chudu. See properly. So I dug my hands into and found a tiger claw in my pocket. Right? Swami, the smile on Swami's face, I'll never forget. I'll never forget the smile on Swami's face. he was like, the smile of, looking at my incredulous face, telling me, oh my God, where did this come from, kind of a thing. And Swami is enjoying the perplexity in my face. Swami says, Vesko, Chadda Swapnal Rao. Keep it, you won't get bad dreams. Here I was, doing all the manthan, should I tell, should I not tell, as if I need to tell. I ran, the thing was forgotten, right? The tiger claw means nothing to me now. But I ran, caught Swami's field. Yes, Swami, I had a terrible dream, this, that, Swami, why did this dream come, this? Chalu, 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 Swami, no? It's like I'm narrating a rerun of a tele serial, right? Normally, right? Kyunki Saas Bhi Kabhi Bahu Thi, right? One more rerun of that program, because Swami has watched the whole thing, right? And I'm narrating it again to him. See, that incident of Swami, that was the birth of the consciousness of how important it is to do the weeding, de-weeding of our hearts. How important it is to keep that pristine purity of that heart. That was the birth of that consciousness. It was not just an intellectual understanding to me, right? It was an awakening. Literally an awakening. I got up from that dream, as it were in cold sweat. I mean, I was sweating. That was the intensity of that awakening. Saying that we have to be very, very vigilant in our sadhana. We have to be very, very vigilant about what qualities take root in our hearts. Because once it has taken root, it is going to corrode. So, this is the first birth from that Hiranyagarbha that I look at. Another occasion, it's like browsing through the pages of the memories and taking out one sheet and seeing what that means today to me. What that means today to me, he has given so many experiences to all of us, so many incidents, not to each individual, but to humanity as a whole, right? It is not one person's experience. It is the Paramatma's gift to the Jivatmas. It is the God's gift to all us human beings. And we need to keep sharing, keep learning, not just from our experiences, from others' experiences also. So this is one more sheet from my experience where it was a very sad occurrence that had sometime in 2001-2002. We had gone for a beautiful visit to Chakur, Latur and Nanded. Swami had gone there sometime in 2000-2001. And we had come back. After some time, we got the news that one of the ladies, a young lady, the daughter of a very eminent personality, she was in the family way. Swami used to get letters from them on a regular basis. Swami, the mother is fine. The person's daughter, right? The daughter was in a family way. She was pregnant. When the child was born, the child's hand was deformed. And this lady, she went into postnatal depression. She became very depressed. And it's a very sad thing. She committed suicide. The father of this girl, I mean, the grandfather of the child, they all came to Swami. I remember seeing how stoic that gentleman was, without any wavering, the deep grief on the face, but the dignity with which he carried himself. I'll never forget the dignity of this gentleman. And Swami was talking a lot about that, telling that, see the way he carries himself. See the way he carries himself. But then, it was as if that entire grief had got shifted to none other than Swami. Here was Swami continuously inquiring about the child. For nearly a week, I remember Swami at the dining table, Swami was sobbing. Just thinking of the child, thinking of the grief of the family, thinking of what that mother would have gone through to have taken such a drastic step. It was so intense that those dining sessions used to be so intense. There was pin drop silence. Everybody is worried to raise any topic. No official topic. No topic about the small news. No small talk at the dining table at all. Dining table used to be bubbling with lot of conversations, etc. But those few days, those 3 or 4 days, Swami used to be in a pensive mood, as if his whole being is there, supporting that family in grief. I have never seen that intensity of empathy, that intensity of compassion. And to have got the experience, got that opportunity to see Swami up close, to see Swami, the way Swami could resonate with everything that his devotees were feeling, who were far, far away. They are going through their own life. It's the universal consciousness. Here is the universal consciousness getting concentrated on one family. To be able to do that is a very, very important. To have compassion and empathy, even when there is detachment, is something very, very beautiful that Swami taught me that day, right? That was the birth. So today, when we talk about, you know, how it has affected me personally, because it's all about personal conviction, right? So how it affects me personally is, even when we are looking at a big project, the Vidyavani project, if we are not going to empathize with each individual teacher, if what a teacher is going through, then this whole project is going to be a failure. There is no point in having a project of a mass scale. What was the mass scale? Unless we are able to understand and empathize with what each child in the rural school is going through, what each teacher in the rural school is going through. There was this video that made me mad with frustration. I was so sad to see this video of a rural school. It's doing its rounds on Facebook and YouTube, where they are showing a video of a teacher who is teaching in the class, and she doesn't know the spellings of the words. Obviously, she is teaching APIL, apple, and here is a person standing and taking the video and making mockery out of that teacher. That teacher is standing there without enough understanding to try to pass on something to the children. And here we are, urban elite, who are going there making a mockery of that teacher. It struck me so badly, because are we not going to empathize with that teacher? If you are not going to help, at least don't hurt, at least don't mock. If you are looking at a big project, if you are looking at it from a universal consciousness, if you are looking at it from a big picture, do not ever feel that, do not ever think that we should not be looking at the small things. We always make this mistake. We are always, especially as we grow in our careers, especially as we grow in our personal life, we always feel that we need to look at the big picture. We can lay off 1,000 people without consequences. We do not. We try to become jaded. We try to become we try to build a fortress around us, absolutely disconnected from the feelings and the emotions of others. Not to let that happen. That is an important quality that Bhagwan is trying to show us on that day. And spirituality is about that, to be able to be detached yet available. Swami was always available, right? A child could go and tell that, Swami, my pencil broke, right? He was available for that, and a child can go and cry at his feet, Swami, I've lost my mother. And he would be there to hug, to pat that child. I'll never forget that incident where Swami was giving a discourse about the Shimla boy. He's now a researcher, PhD scholar here in the university. And Swami calling him the small boy of 8th class. By default, as if by instinct, he went and hugged Swami. He went and put his forehead on Swami's bosom. That boy, and this boy had lost his mother, and here was Swami. Both, we couldn't make out who is crying more, Swami or that child, right? And that is the bonding of the universal mother, of the mother who is always there to know what you feel. Tujhe sab hai pata hai nama. You know that song? The beautiful song. Mother knows everything. Mother knows everything. She knows everything about me. What I have spoken, what I have not spoken, what is deepest, in the deepest recesses of my heart, my fears, my joys, my love, everything is known to my mother. To be available with that amount of love is what Swami teaches. What is the meaning of Swami telling that you should all become like me? What is the meaning of that? It is to develop these abilities, to ensure that these qualities keep coming from the much deeper recesses of our hearts. Another important thing, was with Swami, because we have made it quite serious. It's about humor in life. The life with Swami was always about, we could see there's a twinkle in his eye. Now, there was one, this gentleman, very serious, very elderly gentleman, I really love to use the word, a very good friend of Swami, right? Because, he is Swami's age, physically, obviously. And Swami had a beautiful rapport with him, and Swami used to keep pulling his leg and, keep listening to him. And, it was a beautiful relationship that this gentleman had with Swami. So, here was this gentleman, and he used to take Padnamaskar of Swami about, say, 5 to 6 times a day. And every time, if there is an announcement telling that all the boys have got 100%, there's 100% results in the 12th class, he will take Padnamaskar. Right? If somebody tells that today the mobile van was inaugurated, he will take namaskar. So anything, whatever happens, anywhere in the world, in the Sai family, sir would always take namaskar. Right? So, and we used to feel delighted, elated, happy to see the way he used to take namaskar. You know, he used to fully lie down on the floor and, he'll short gentleman. But he'll make all the struggles and then he'll take namaskar. And, he'd be so happy. And we would feel that, okay, we have all got namaskar. Because the way he used to, the satisfaction on his face when he'd take. Swami used to say, Swami used to call him for food once in a while. He used to call him for lunch. And then he used to say, hey, after food, don't have namaskar, man. The stomach, because he lie down, right, fully. You know, it's like the stomach playing as a seesaw, right? So, after bhojanam tarvata vaddu bangaru. No, he would not listen. Namaskar is my birthright, and I shall have it, kind of a thing, right? Like Swarajya. So one day, this gentleman, he was taking namaskar. He normally, that's the Indian culture, that you touch the right foot with the right hand and the left foot with the left hand. So he used to always do this. So he was taking namaskar. Swami is looking at me with a twinkle in his eyes. He's just telling me, wait, I'll pull his leg, kind of a thing, right? He's that indication. So I was waiting. So when he finished the namaskar and all those things he did, and his legs also are crossed. The right leg would be on the left leg. So Swami, the moment he got up, told, Chudu Bangaru, I'm asking you a question. Don't misunderstand. Don't take it otherwise. Should you keep the right hand over the left hand or the left hand over the right hand? Right? So here is Swami. No. It's a ritual. It's something very pious for us. For Orthodox Indians, Orthodox Hindus, it is very important and a ritual and a rule that you have to do this. And here is Swami making fun, making light of everything, and he is telling that should you put the right hand over the left or the right, left or the right? And I know, and all of us knew that Swami is asking, making fun, but this gentleman, he became very serious. Swami, which is the right way, Swami? Right? Now he is confused now. So here is Bhagavan, the humor aspect. See, sadhana should be very serious. We have to be very serious in our sadhana. But sadhana should not make us serious. You see the difference? We become castor oil faced because we are so intense in our sadhana that I would not even smile. Because smiling would dissipate my energy, and if the joy is not visible, if the joy is not radiating from our hearts, radiating from our every pore, how are we going to take, how are we going to make sure that others enjoy sadhana? If it's going to make me a grousy man, I will never be able to tell somebody else do sadhana. Oh my God, if I'm going to become like you, I'm better off without my sadhana, right? So this was a continuous thing. Here was the 75-year-old Swami standing and the 18-year-old, 19-year-old young boys sitting, and they are all laughing. It's like peals of laughter coming out of the bhajan hall, right? Or from the interview room. Peals of laughter. I mean, the whole bhajan hall and the interview room used to rock with the, if you have to make an animation out of it, you'll show the mandir, rocking like that, right? Is it not? That's how it used to be. It's really rocking with laughter. Swami rocks. Makes you rock with laughter. And there were many, many incidents. One of my favorite photos of my own photos is, here is Swami standing and Anil Kumar sir standing next to him. And I am sitting with my knees, my elbows around my knees. And I'm like, my face is up. Mouth is like as big as a crocodile, right? And I'm laughing out loud. Here is Swami standing there. How dare you laugh so much, right? Is what you would always feel. But that picture is my favorite picture. That is the joy that Swami radiated. That radiance of love, that radiance of humor, that radiance of joy should keep coming out of us. Because that is the true essence of sadhana. That sadhana will not make us, real sadhana, true sadhana, the way Swami used to talk about, will not make you a serious person, will not make you, there won't be furrows on your brow, right? It won't be there. It will be ironed out. All those problems will be ironed out. You'll find joy in our life. And finally, one more beautiful birth that I am talking about. So, a beautiful thing that was born in the heart was when he claimed his right to correct me. It was in 1999, 2000 probably. I was going through the grind period of my life, right? The ring period of my life. I mean, absolutely, ring, W-R-I-N-G, when my ring was broken, right? Both, you know, when the ring breaks, you go through the ring, W-R-I-N-G, ring. So the squeeze is bad. So I was being trained, if you know what I mean, right? training is like going through the furnace, okay? So here I was. It's like sometimes furnace and sometimes the freezer. The path is like that. It's minus 30 degrees to 130 degrees you have to keep going through. The oven and the freezer kind of a training process it is. He will blast you and then he won't talk to you for a couple of months. I mean, like. So this was the period when my ring, the one stone from my ring had fallen off. So we are superstitious always, right? Whenever it comes to any creation of Swami, we are so superstitious. Oh my God, the ring is gone, so what is wrong with me? Right? Obviously, I mean, Swami creates these opportunities for us to do self-inquiry. Everything that happens, you know, when we see good signs, when we see a bad omen or a good omen, we always want to feel the presence of Swami. If something is not going right, it's good to feel that, you know, there is something, not get bogged down by these omens, but use these omens as an opportunity to introspect. That's the difference. Not to be bogged down, not to, you know, start becoming serious and, you know, uncomfortable, but to use every opportunity to start introspecting, to look into ourselves. Ki sab theek hai ya nahi hai? You know, is everything all right inside? Should I be doing some washing? Some laundry cleaning needs to be done inside. So here I was with a ring broken, with a stone disappeared, stone having disappeared from my ring. I was sitting at Swami's feet. If I ask Swami, I'll get blasted, but I'll get the ring mended. I know that, right? I'll get blasted. But should I go through the blasting or not is the question right now. So Swami made the decision very easy for me. The moment I sat there, told, hey, Nibana chala complaints was to Naira. Hey, there are lots of complaints about you. It just started. It was just the opening remark for, you know, further beautiful things to come, actually. Right? And to chala matlaadtunna out of office, because you're talking too much in the office. I mean, in office you have to talk, right, to your colleagues. So you can't give these explanations to Swami, but, right? So it was office chala matlaadtunnada. It was just the opening remarks, and I broke down. And Swami would have wondered, hey, my God, I'm just beginning, man. You already started, kind of a thing. So I broke down because the intensity was so much that I broke down and I started, sobbing there. Immediately Swami changed. Immediately Swami, there was a marked difference in Swami's demeanor. Not from anger to compassion, but from anger to disgust. Immediately told, hey, Yemra, Yedustunav. I was sitting at his feet. He kicked me, actually. Hey, chik, Yem Yedustunav. The full stop on the crying thing. No, Swami. And words are not coming. The ring, Swami, stone, poindi, Swami. Mote? What? So what? If it is gone, I'll give you a new ring. What's the big deal? Can I not even shout at you? I am looking after you so well. Inta baga chustunna nenu oka ninnu arche avakasham arche hakku kuda leda naku. I am looking after you so well. Don't I even have the right to shout at you? Don't I even have that right? So here is Bhagwan claiming the right, okay? Claiming the right. So that thought, that incident, it was the birth of a consciousness, birth of a way of life in my, the way of looking at things, that there are no problems in life. Every problem is Bhagwan claiming his right to correct me. Any challenge that comes in our life, see, that becomes what a beautiful life we can lead if we can really think of this. Okay. Come to that consciousness, telling that I am here, I am being tested by Bhagwan. Not it's not a test. Test is my taste is one thing. But to think that here is Bhagwan claiming his right to put me through the grind. Right? A beautiful consciousness. When you start feeling God's grace, not for preventing something bad, but feeling God's grace in the calamity itself. Feeling God's grace in the problem itself. Right? Be that walking with God. Am I making the distinction between the two? You don't pray to God to help you through this problem. The problem is a state of mind. The problem that we face is actually a state of mind. And to consider divine intervention, not divine intervention, divine companionship in the times of the so-called problems, telling that I know that I am going through this because Swami is with me. It's a different perspective to life. It's a very beautiful perspective to life where troubles become our companions. It's a beautiful song from a Hindi movie, long, very ancient, very old movie, which says, "Sukh to aati jaati hai, dukh to apna saati hai." Grief is rahi manwa dukh ki chinta kyun satati hai, dukh to apna saati hai. Oh, traveler on this path of life, why do you get bothered about the worries of grief? Grief is a companion. To have God as the embodiment of everything is a beautiful consciousness that came into my mind on that day when I went through this grind. We have discussed so far about the Hiranyagarbha as the source of all creation, you know, as the creator himself there, God standing there trying to, you know, Hiranyagarbha coming out and then trying to find out whom do I pray to, right? That was the first imagery that we created for ourselves. The next was Hiranyagarbha as the creation of the universe, you know, comparing the Hiranyagarbha to the Big Bang, right? The universe before the Big Bang. So Hiranyagarbha is meant to be the source of all that is seen, all that is manifest in the world. From there we came to the level of creation of Hiranyagarbha being the source of all that is auspicious, all that is, all that goodness, all that golden qualities that are there in our hearts. Hiranyagarbha is the source of that. I would like to bring one more perspective, with your permission, to talk about what kind of consciousness you need to have, how expanded the consciousness becomes when you try to perceive the Hiranyagarbha. There was a beautiful video I had seen very recently about something called the cognitive shift or the overview effect. This happens in astronauts who have gone to the International Space Center and come back, or who have gone to the moon and come back. When they see the Earth from space, when they see the Earth from space, telling that there is that bluish, green, white ball up there in the sky. A beautiful view. No? We see the moon rising and setting. From the moon, they see the Earth rising and setting. And it gives, or in the International Space Center, where they circumambulate the Earth, you know, hundreds of times a day, right? At extremely high velocity, they keep traveling. These astronauts, they go through a cognitive shift. They start looking at things differently. They see that here I am, standing away and looking at my Earth as a planet. There's a beautiful quote. It says, "The beauty of seeing the Earth as a planet, as opposed to being down there among them, is a wonderful experience. I am not part of the Earth now. I am looking at the Earth from a different standpoint." So astronauts have gone through, you know, they find a different shift in consciousness. They are not able to re-engage in their day-to-day mundane lives after they come back. There's just a small skin of atmosphere around the Earth. What we see, the cyclones and the storms and the clouds and the rains and the depression and the heat, etc., that we see, is just a small skin around the Earth. It's just, you know, when you look at it from that perspective, that beautiful, it's a beautiful video. I think the sisters of Anandpur, you should see that video about the overview effect. It's a beautiful video. So when you see that, our consciousness shifts. These astronauts, they feel that, and there are astronauts who have done a lot of work trying to understand this. What am I going through? Why am I not able to re-engage in this small? Now, when you have seen Earth from there, you don't, you cannot engage in doing the laundry or fighting with your neighbor, right? So you have seen at a different, or, you know, the boundaries of the nations disappear. There is no boundaries. You can't see boundaries. It's all in the maps that we see. But there are no boundaries when you see it from space. It's a beautiful consciousness that of, you know, a shift in the consciousness that is called. It's called a cognitive shift. And, you know, there is one beautiful quote from Fred Hoyle, a very eminent astronaut. In 1950s, he writes, "Once a photograph of the Earth taken from the outside is made available, a new idea as powerful as any in history would be let loose." When you look at Earth from outside, it would be a change and shift of the consciousness. But this change, this cognitive shift, is something that has been happening since time immemorial in this great land of Bharat. There was Swami Vivekananda. I had the good fortune of going to Kanyakumari and sat at, and we were looking at the Vivekananda Memorial Rock. So that was the rock where Vivekananda Swami Vivekananda, after a long walk with all his asthma, with all his physical problems, he swam across to that rock and he sat and meditated on that rock. And he had the vision of sitting at the end of India and feeling the entire Bharat behind him. You can imagine the consciousness shift that has happened in him. He is telling that, here is my entire motherland behind me. And what is it? For 3 days he sat there without water or food, immersed in that consciousness, immersed in that thought, telling that, what am I going to do for my motherland which lies behind me? Do you think he can go back to a normal life after that? Here is a consciousness shift there. He expresses that. He writes about that, telling that that was the consciousness shift that happened, a cognitive shift that happened in his mind at that point of time. That is one level, right? When the entire Bharat is behind me. Another beautiful thought from the Isha Upanishad. That's a beautiful verse, the 16th verse of the Isha Upanishad. It says, O son, O Pushan, O son, O soul pilgrim, O soul pilgrim of solitude, O controller and absorber of all, offspring of Prajapati, withdraw thy rays and gather up thy radiant brilliance. Withdraw thy rays and gather up your radiant brilliance, that form of thine, most gracious, through thy grace may I behold. He, the Purusha in the solar arc, I am. Soham asmi, soham asmi, soham asmi. See the consciousness shift that has happened to this seer who is sitting there looking at the sun, resplendent sun, and he is telling, O sun, pull back your radiance. He is imagining the Purusha standing there, that divine effulgence is the effulgence of a being, of an entity that is much greater than anything imagined. So withdraw your rays so that I can see your form. Because I know when I see that form, I will know that I am that form. To have a consciousness shift, telling that I am that. To have a perception of the world, telling that I am that. How benevolent, how loving, how filled with courage would a person like that be? Telling that I am that. I take one more step backwards, one more step higher to paint a picture for all of us of Bhagwan standing with the Hiranyagarbha in his hand. Swami, he had materialized the Hiranyagarbha and he is standing. What is the level of consciousness that Bhagwan operates from? Here he is saying, I am the creator of the Hiranyagarbha, which is the source of all creation. Right? You say from Vivekananda to where Bharat is behind me, to this seer who says that I am that resplendent sun, to Bhagwan standing with the source of all creation. When we think of Jagan Mata, when we use that word Jagan Mata, please bring this image to your mind's eye. And that here is Bhagwan holding that Hiranyagarbha. He is the giver. He is the creator of that Hiranyagarbha. And what is the kind of consciousness, the compassion, the love that Bhagwan operates from? If we are able to apply our fleeting intellect, rally the vagrant thoughts towards this one image of Bhagwan, towards this one concept of what is the consciousness from which, what is the level of consciousness from which Bhagwan operates. If we spend time thinking about this and feeling that love of Bhagwan from that universal consciousness level, our lives will not be the same again. So, bowing with love and reverence at the lotus feet of Jagat Janani, of the creator of the Hiranyagarbha, of a consciousness so vast, so immense, that the entire creation is there as a small symbol in his hand to that consciousness. On this very, very auspicious and beautiful day, we wash his feet with our tears of gratitude and love. Sai Ram. All of you heard the question? No, see, I'm buying time basically. one of the techniques of buying time is to repeat the question, they say. The question is, what is the synthesis of what are Swami's commandments or Swami's ideas about Bhakti Yoga, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga? This has been the foundation of everything that Swami has done in the world, in his avatarhood. You know, he has set up the organization in that way. The entire organization is set up in the three divisions that he has created are based on that. That it is the devotion, the bhajans, the bhajan wing is nothing but the bhakti yoga, bhakti marga. The seva is nothing but the karma marga. And the jnana marga is nothing but the spiritual wing. There are three wings that we have. The spiritual, the devotional and service. So he has always synthesized the three, right? That has been his encouragement. He has, you know, there's this beautiful saying of, you must have heard the story of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, who, one of the, you know, his disciple, Premananda, he has gone to bring some jalpushp. You know, jalpushp is fish. Okay, I mean the blossoms of. So he has gone to buy fish from on the other sides of the on the banks of the Ganges, and on his way back, some fisherman, the boatman, you know, starts cursing these disciples and to Ramakrishna also. So he comes back crying, and he you know, when Ramakrishna asks, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa asks, what happened? Why are you crying? He says that person abused me so much, you know, abused you so much. I could not bear it. I cried. But, hey, you are a sissy fellow. You know, how dare you listen to the Guru Drohi you are? Because, you know, how can you listen to Guru Dushana? You know, when somebody has criticized your Guru, you sat there calmly and took it in. So how dare you do that kind of a thing? So he blushed him. So next day Vivekananda goes. Right, so the same fellow starts, and this fellow Vivekananda catches him by the whatever. He may not have a collar, but whatever, he catches him by his arms and tells that I'm going to drown you in the Ganges, etc. And he comes back proudly and says, this is what I did, master. So Ramakrishna Paramahamsa blasts him, telling that you shameless fellow, you are calling yourself a yogi, you are a sannyasi, and you have no control over your anger. How dare you? So what if he talks some nonsense about your guru? What how is it going to affect me? No, it does not affect me. So here, Bhagwan used to use, and when somebody asks Ramakrishna, Ramakrishna says, see, Swami's way of explaining that is telling that, a cycle lo gali ekku undindi, kuncham tagginchali, ikkada kuncham takku undindi, kuncham pump cheyali. In that cycle, in the cycle wheel, air pressure was a bit low, so I had to pump air into that was Premananda. But this pump, this cycle tube has got extra air, so I had to deflate it a bit, right? So I have to, it's all about balance. And that is exactly what Swami talks about. You know, the balance between the three things is what is so very important. I have seen Swami, totally ignoring youth. Many, many youth who have come, sometimes he praises them, and then after a couple of visits, you know, I have heard about the Vizag boys, I have heard it from the Hyderabad boys, that Swami used to encourage them, you know, when they used to come cycling all the way from Vizag. They were Bombay walking boys. He used to encourage them to come walking with that. That is the fervor of karma. But then he suddenly withdraws, telling that, go inside now. Oh, go inside. You balance it with your devotion. You balance it just not with an external devotion also. I mean, they do bhajans when they come. But go inside. Do your spiritual sadhana. It is not enough for you to be just in the rajasic mode of activity. You have to sit back and get the sattvic qualities. Look, do the de-weeding once in a while, right? Look inside. And see that the best qualities inside are further improved. So this has been the crux of what Swami has always been telling about the three things. What he is saying is, when others come and ask questions about the organization, about Swami, and if we are unable to convincingly talk to them, then we feel disempowered. We feel that manlo power ledu, that we ourselves are getting distance from Swami. A beautiful saying that Swami has told. Lopala vatavaranam bagunte, baita vatavaranam em chestundi. No, it's a beautiful saying, Swami said. When our internal environment is beautiful, it's good, what would the external environment do? Right? Mana lopala sadhana, when our own sadhana, when our own love to Swami is intact, we do not owe it to others to explain. Mana bita valu, valaki explain cheste, explanation valaki adi lotaka po. It will not go deep into their hearts just by oral explanation. Mimmalnu, mi jivitanni chusi valu neskovali. If you are going to put Swami's teaching into your ideals, when you become a torch bearer, right? I mean, a real torch bearer, that my life itself is resplendence. The smile on my face, the radiance on my face, the lack of tamas in my place, the energy in my bearing, that should be reflective of your sadhana. Right? So, matal to rao. And with words, you cannot convince anybody. If you're going to convince anybody with words, they are the people who will get convinced otherwise very quickly. Please, it is a very clear thing. It is, if anybody is going to be convinced only with words, be assured that they can be convinced the other way. See, he is asking that should we be only doing our sadhana or should we be doing work for others? And firstly, sir, I mean, let us move away from the understanding that everything else is deviant and I am only on the right path. That is a big challenge that we always face, especially when we are doing sadhana. Manam inta sadhana chestunnamu, nenu inta sadhana chestunnanu, kani vallu sadhana cheyadam ledu kabatti vallu takku vallu. Aa feeling nunchi dooram, first and foremost that has to be, that ego of having done sadhana, that the ego that comes by sadhana is one of the most dangerous things, right? So first moving away from that, then whether we need to do maunam or actually speak about it, there is balance. If you are always going to be talking about the greatness of things, you do not have time to sharpen your own communication. For that, maunam is important. It is very important. You have to shut down. I do it. I shut down the doors. I switch off my phones and one full day I take off. Couple of days I take off. Just inside the room doing nothing. Maybe I have a couple of Maggie packets standby. But I don't step out of the room at all. That maunam is very, very important for self-analysis. For looking. Because when we keep talking, we come to a stage where we start talking about things that we ourselves are not practicing. When that happens, nobody is going to listen. Nobody is going to listen. So, a balanced maunam is important to sharpen your intellect, sharpen your own sadhana, so that, again, the thing is resplendence. A maunam to a tejas vachchustundi. That will take care of things. Reaction, reflection and resound is what you are asking about. I'm repeating the question. No examples are coming to my mind, but you know, this is a concept that Bhagavan has already always spoken about, telling that, you know, it is if you are going to do good to others, the good is always going to be reflected onto you. I mean, it's a very, very basic, very, very fundamental root of what, you know, Swami has spoken about. That's the most important aspect of it, and everything that we see around is nothing but, it's all about perception, right? It's all about the way we look at things outside. You know, the way we are tuned to look at. I mean, it's, in my personal life, for example, you know, as I was a child, I was chased by a dog once. I remember as a 7-year-old boy, there was one dog, and God promised I did not do anything to that dog. And you know, that dog started chasing me. And I left my mother's hand and I started running. Right? I started running, and you know, fortunately somebody had a brick somewhere and they threw it at the dog and I got saved. But from that time onwards, whenever I see a dog, I don't see a dog there, I see a lion there. Right? It's my perception, it's my reflection. I do not see reality as it is. So the whole concept is telling that every friction, every argument that happens. See, once there was an argument that some problem that had come up in the super speciality hospital about, there was some friction about between people, and you know, it had become slightly bitter. So I was looking into this. I was asking people around, and because some letter had come, Swami had told, just look into this matter. So I was asking things around. So when I started digging deeper and started reporting to Swami, Swami gave a very beautiful saying. He said that you need not dig so much into every small things, because you will never get to the truth of it. What is reality, you will never get. You will only get perceptions. You will only get stories of each mind. What this fellow thought the other fellow did, what that fellow thought this fellow did. So every perception, everything that we do in our life, all opinions that we create in our heads is your opinion only. That is not the reality. And that is what Swami means. It is your reflection. It is just a reaction to your way of being. If you are good, see, naku yavar dveshilu leru, Swami used to say. There are no enemies for me. Because I love all. No, and you know, he had, there was this beautiful incident in Kerala, in Kodaikanal, Swami was talking about that. He had gone to Kerala, the DGP of Kerala had organized the whole meet. So, you know, very, very humbly he came to Swami and told Swami, without pointing the finger, Swami, that back right corner, please don't go there, Swami, they are all rationalists. And all were standing like this. Swami is showing. He's sitting in the chair and he's saying, "Andaru itla nilchukunnaru." Nenu nerga vaalla daggara vellanu. So no, you tell Swami not to do something. Swami will exactly do that. So Swami went directly there, made a beeline to them. Nenu vaalla daggara vellanu, vaallu itla nilchukunnaru. Nenu itla chesanu, vaallu itla chesaru. Right? I went directly. He is not reacting to their attitude. Right? I am not reacting to their, and he is being his own self. He is divine. He is full of benevolence, and he does not have those labels of rationalists and devotion and devotees, etc. He goes directly to them, and you aware, they automatically, who are there, they become like this. That is the reaction to his. So who, are you going to react, or are you going to create the action for which there will be reactions otherwise? So that is what Swami is talking about.
Sai Ram. Can you please explain the fundamental nature of a man? As per my understanding, maybe that there are two aspects. One is bliss and love. Which one proceeds or succeeds, or both are same?
Bliss and love.
Yeah.
Wow. I had the good fortune of asking this about the question between peace and love. Peace and love. So, you know, my father had asked the question, what comes first, Swami? Does peace come first, or does love come first? Swami gave the answer very categorically. Mundu shanti vastundi ani cheppu. First you will find peace, and then from that love. And love is bliss. When you feel in love with, when you are in love with someone, when you are in love with God, bliss is always there. There is no distinction. I don't see there is a distinction between love and bliss. But between peace and love is something that Swami always has made a distinction, telling that only when there is peace in the heart, when those thorns of ashanti are removed, only then the blossom, the flower of love will blossom in our heart.
Can I ask you one more thing that, I read the meaning of the bliss as wishing nothing, desiring nothing, wanting nothing.
Of bliss?
Bliss. Wishing nothing, desiring nothing, and wanting nothing, which is a total fulfillment of the soul itself, which is divine. So is that concept with which we have to work the upliftment of the soul?
Wishing nothing, desiring nothing,
and wanting nothing.
It's the same words, right? All three mean the same,
yeah.
Actually. I mean, there is no desire.
Yeah,
I mean,
no,
see,
yeah.
That, basically, Swami's definition is that I want peace, the definition that Swami tells, that okay. You remove the want and remove the ego, you have peace.
Fine.
And it is the ability, with love, it is the ability to surrender yourself to the beloved. No, it is to remove that ego aspect. No, Swami always used to tell a beautiful example, that imagery that Swami used to talk is that for the men, you know, he gives this example of Hanuman, Sita going into the inner chambers of Rama's room. Hanuman says that I also want to come in. So he tells that, we will not be allowed. That kumkuma on Sita's forehead is giving her the right to go into the inner chambers of Sri Rama. So Hanuman, being a monkey, obviously, you know, douses himself with kumkuma and tells that, see, I've got kumkuma all over, let me enter, right? And he uses that example, and Swami says that for the intellect, the intelligence, has got access only up to the darbar of God. It is only the devotion that is the feminine aspect of our heart. They're telling that which easily surrenders, which easily is able to accept love as more supreme than myself. And my ego, my existence is not that important. It's that merger of my existence with something of my beloved that is important. And it is only to that consciousness, which is love, that is given inner access to God. So this aspect is what, you know, I feel is one of the most beautiful things.
Okay, thank you.
The question is, did Swami speak about the next avatar? To me. So the first interaction was, which avatar would you like to see? No, this is that an incident that I have narrated many times, and he was asking me which form do you want to see. So I didn't want to answer, because there is a thing going on in my mind telling that, should I ask, should I not ask? Here I am looking at Swami, what more do I want to see? But the other thing is telling, hey, this is your chance, ask, right, kind of a thing. And Swami said, bolo, pucho, he's asking me in the car, first or second car ride with Swami. And he told, Rama dekhta hai, Krishna dekhta hai, do you want to see Rama, do you want to see Krishna, do you want to see Narasimha? I told immediately, no Swami, absolutely not, very clear about that. So right, all the avatar. Then Swami said, bolo ra, kya dekhta hai, old man dekhta hai, do you want to see the old man, I mean Shirdi avatar. I told, no Swami, I'm seeing Swami. Hey, itna bar puch sakta hai, why do you want to make Swami ask so many times? Do I need to ask you so many times? Ask. So I thought, okay, let me ask a non-controversial this thing, because if I tell Krishna, Swami, loho, tumko Krishna jada ishta hai, right? So I told Swami, Vishwaroop dekhta hai. And Swami puts his hand outside and says, Roj dekhta hai, samaj mein nahi aata. So you're seeing the Vishwaroopa every day, but you're not realizing it. So he wanted that consciousness shift to happen. But the point here is that ever since that day, never ever have I asked about the other forms of Bhagwan. Because the contentment, the love, the ability for this small heart to take the love of one avatar is not sufficient. I have never asked, and he has never discussed. So my heart is contented with what I have received as grace from Bhagwan.
Sai Ram, I think you are the one of the closest souls physically with the Bhagavan. I just want to share your experience with the routine activities with the Swami and how
daily activities with Swami. It's daily activities with Swami. I mean, you know, it's as really, I mean, really the simplicity of Bhagavan's life is something that there is so much to see, so much to learn from that. You know, just his. One thing that used to really touch me was, you know, everybody wants to offer, right? Everybody wants to offer food to Swami, and there will be 5-10 different carriers that are coming, and half the table would be filled with, you know, tiffin carriers. And here would be Bhagwan eating one ragi mudda, right? One ball of ragi, you know, with groundnut chutney, and you know, and that would be his. And to see all those things, to be always the thought that used to come to me was, you know, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa telling that I continue to be in this existence by thinking that tomorrow I am going to have rice with 4 curries. So keeping that small desire is what prevents me from going into Nirvikalpa Samadhi throughout. But here was Swami, you know, he doesn't need, you know, he is so grounded, so, it's a terrible word to use, but, you know, he is, the consciousness of Swami is such that he is in equanimity with everything. One beautiful incident I'll narrate is, I'm narrating incidents also, sir. So, because when somebody asks questions, incidents very pertinent to that comes to mind. So we had gone to Madurai once, it was in 1997, I think, or 97 or 98. From Kodaikanal we had come down, to put the foundation of the Ananda Nilayam in Madurai. That was a small mandir that was being constructed there. So we had come down, and there was absolute chaos there, because, you know, it had started raining, and whole place was filled with muck, you know. I mean that sand, the mud was fully wet. Everything was, you know, pachak 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 kind of a thing. And the car stopped, and Swami got down, and he went. So Srinivasan sir was driving. He looked back. He found me. Why are you still inside? Go, go, go! He said, right? Because it's all crowded. The entire, it was messy. The shamiana had become like this because it was all filled with water. Like if that opens, like everybody would have had a nice head bath that day, right? So here was Swami going through the carpet, and I was a bit late. Swami got up and got. There were two security guards who went forward. And the simplicity, okay, I mean, the way Swami placed with us, and he had gone halfway through, and I went behind a little bit. Swami was nearly, more than halfway through there. So just like, you know, after Moses crosses, what happens? The Red Sea had parted for Moses, and after he crossed, what happened? So the followers could not, the pursuers could not follow. So I got enmeshed in the Samsara Sagara. Right, so everybody got up. It was like chaos everywhere, pulling, pushing. So Swami had already reached the stage, and I'm crying out for help from down here, telling them, like, there's no way, I can't go back. The car is there. I can't go back. I can't go front. It's like major pushing and pulling going on there, because people had become impatient with the rain and this. So Swami went up and he looked back. There was a big smile on his face, right? And seeing the struggle that I'm like elbowing and getting, trying to get out of that. So Swami sent his two dutas, telling that, okay, just pull him out of the Sagara kind of a thing, right? So it's a wonderful memory. So the two security fellows came and then pulled me out of there. And, you know, there, I was with that impression, telling them, I am going to protect Swami, right? Because I am Swami's security guard. And here is Swami sending to extricate me. Therefore, that smile was unbelievable. He's looking at Abhay, so suddenly he looked at like that, and he looked at me, permission to go extricate him. So we went onto the stage, and we were now trying to assess the situation. There is no way we can go back to the car, because it was complete chaos there. So the state president, D.G. Krishnamurthy sir, he went backstage, he went, caught somebody, he got his ambassador car, and told that Swami will go from behind. So, you know, here is Swami. We are escorting Swami. Again, that consciousness, that incident is forgotten, that he extricated me. Again, I am the protector, right? Like the bodyguard. So I go inside and I tell Swami, Swami will go there. We sit into a small ambassador car. And, you know, with that ambassador car, he takes us to the mandir, to Mr. Chetty's house. And it was so chaotic, and Swami was still so calm. He's asking like an innocent child, where are you taking me? Where are you taking me? That innocence of Swami, right? So here he is, that first he's there, then he's again going back, where are you taking me? I am seeking your protection, kind of a thing. No? That beauty, the way Swami plays, you know, and gives us the feeling of being wanted. That's the most important. Everything about Swami, you know, is about making you feel wanted, making you have a sense of purpose in life. Sense of purpose of doing something good for Swami, something beautiful for Swami. So, you know, we were driving the car, and suddenly we found that we have come to a house, and that those people are inviting. It's actually the neighbor's house. They are inviting Swami inside. Right? We were supposed to go to the other house. So Swami, we again had to close the door, and that person who was driving didn't know where it is. So these are all small events that happen in the day-to-day life. These are all not the day-to-day life. Some beautiful incidents like this are these things, you know, fill the memory with the wonderful things. I think it's almost 12. I don't think I should go on. Otherwise, we can go on for till Purnahuti tomorrow, actually. Right?
Vithala Narayana. Hare Hare. జగన్మోహన రాధారమణ